We have a big treat for you today because we are doing an absolute fan favorite, which is Fleabag.
Absolute favorite. I think it's near perfect.
It truly near perfect.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge's masterpiece. It is 2 seasons, BBC and Amazon, and it started as a play that she wrote and then became a TV show, and it was originally supposed to just be 1 season, and it's amazing. It's so good. And then because it did so well, they ended up bringing it back for a 2nd season, which is somehow even better.
I truly can't imagine them not bringing it. Like, I don't know what life would be. I feel like not only us, but like the entire world was obsessed. Like, she blew up, as she should have.
Blew up. And I think really what makes the 2nd season, oh, I know we both agree with this, what makes the 2nd season really just over the edge is the hot priest.
Oh my God. Andrew Scott.
Wait, Em, what are you drinking today?
I am drinking white wine. That is very crucial to season 2, episode 1.
I'm also drinking wine, had the exact same thought. This is why we're best friends, we're on the same page. I'm drinking wine for the same reason, because it's a crucial part of that scene, and it's a great scene.
The 1st season's so good. So this is essentially a show about a very complicated woman. She's sort of like an infomaniac going through 2 huge types of grief. Her best friend and her mom have both passed away. And it's a comedy, so you're laughing most of the time, but it's also some very dark material. Whereas the 2nd season is about her coming out of that, like doing well on her own. And then like after she has decided to be abstinent and like really try to figure herself out before she continues having sex again, she meets a hot priest. And so what could go wrong? Incredible.
Incredible. And one of the things that makes the show so unique and a central part of the show is Fleabag's use of the 4th wall and just constantly breaking it. And it's really the central relationship that Fleabag has, I think, is with us as the audience.
Well, and it's so, obviously we'll expand more on like how it changes in the 2nd season, but it's just like when you meet her in the 1st scene that you meet Phoebe in Fleabag, she is preparing for essentially a booty call, a one night stand to come over. And so she's like just fully talking to the audience. She's like, I have to act like I like just got home. Meanwhile, he called me. I like showered, did my hair, like just a whole spiel. So you like just fall in love with her and start relating to her immediately. And then you realize that this is her technique throughout the whole show.
Right. We really see like how alone Fleabag is, that she has to create this friendship with us because she's going through so much grief and she feels so alone that she's forced to like create this relationship with us. I feel like you can just relate so much to her in the beginning because you feel like you're part of her story and she knows you're there watching.
Completely. Exactly. It also just like hits that perfect comedy note because she, like, anytime anyone else says something that like you would laugh at or you would roll your eyes, like she's also reacting in that way. So she just like turns to look at you being like, can you believe this? And it just makes it that like you are constantly on the same page as she is reacting to certain situations.
Totally. And I think that's why even when she's making questionable choices and saying questionable things or whatever it is, you always root for her because you feel like you're just with her for the whole journey from the 2nd it starts.
Oh, yeah, because she's a complicated character and she does a lot of things that you're like, this is not the best choice, but she's like, yeah, I also know this isn't the best choice. Like, come on.
One of the things that is a big theme throughout the show and throughout Fleabag's life and her sister Claire's life is being a feminist and what that means to her.
It is. So when you meet Claire for the first time, her sister, they are at a feminist lecture and it absolutely kills me because the speaker, like she says at one point, she's like, would you trade 5 years of your life for a better body or like something along those lines? And no one raises their hand aside from Claire and Fleabag, who immediately put their hands up. And like from that point on, she says a few times, she's like, I am a bad, we're bad feminists, like very yeah. bad.
In season two, she's at this Quaker meeting where you're only supposed to stand up and say something in front of the group if you're called to. And she gets up and she says, "Sometimes I feel like I wouldn't be such a good feminist if I had bigger tits." Yeah. And so the whole kind of like theme is Fleabag being a feminist, and also like a lot of her focus is on her youth and her body and sex and what that means and how those two things go hand in hand.
Well, and then in reality, Phoebe Waller-Bridge just making this show in general with this concept around the female gaze and around having sex and around being a woman that makes a ton of mistakes and is not necessarily like good or bad, like all of these things are so great for females to actually see and just see portrayed on screen. And we do believe that we are feminists and, you know, hold certain standards, but then also there's so many expectations in reality. Like, of course, we still want to look good and we still want to dress up and we still, you know, think about our bodies and how the world is seeing us all the time.
Totally. And I think that something that Fleabag and I think probably Phoebe also really cares about in that way is like how both of those things can exist. And like you do care so much about being a feminist, and at the same time, you don't want to say the wrong thing. And like if you bring up that you want the perfect body, like what does that mean? Does that mean you're not a feminist? And I feel like all of these questions Phoebe slash Fleabag kind of explores in this in a funny but also very meaningful and very relatable way. I think also the way that Phoebe writes about sex and Fleabag's sort of obsession with sex is really interesting because there aren't a lot of shows, I feel like, where women's sexuality is really explored.
And what's so, like, we are talking, we obviously talked about it with Normal People because we thought those scenes were so realistic and just stylized perfectly. And what, like, Fleabag, what I think is so interesting is that she talks about sex all the time and obviously, like, does have it, but it's never in this romantic, I guess, until the second season at the very end, but it's never in this, like, romantic way, or we don't even get to see enough of her having it to like know, like it's just more so something that finally is being talked about, not necessarily in a romanticized, just in a complicated way.
Right. And I think that that is part of the way that we like dealing with breaking of the fourth wall. She talks to us as she's having sex with these guys and kind of is like telling us about it as it's happening, and she's not able to actually connect, or she doesn't really care yeah. to connect with the guys.
Well, it's just like Villanelle, who obviously she created that character as well, but like Villanelle, they're both just constantly trying to feel something, and it's not really working until it finally works. Then they're fulfilled, but in the meantime, they're just doing anything and everything, the drama, the sex, the flirting, like just to try to get some emotion out of themselves until right. they figure out what it is they're actually missing.
It's so true. We talked about how she has lost her best friend, Boo, and also her mom. I feel like part of Fleabag's way of dealing with those emotions and that like deep, deep sadness that she feels is just keeping every single person at bay and not really yeah. trying to connect with anyone because she doesn't want to lose them.
And you don't even really understand like how deeply her grief affects her until the like second to last and last episode of season one.
The relationship that Fleabag has with her dad and the godmother, Olivia Colman, is
who was her mother's best friend. So unbelievable. Slightly complicated.
And Olivia Colman is flawless. In the pilot, Fleabag steals this sculpture that her godmother made, and it kind of pops up through a lot of the first season and even into the second season a lot too. And we find out at the end of season two, godmother says, "I always thought it was interesting that this is the statue you stole because this one was formed after your mother, and it's great to have her back in the house. You have this idea of the godmother as being this, like, totally evil stepmother, but in a way, she was, like, honoring Fleabag's mom by having the sculpture.
Well, and I think she was best friends with Fleabag's mother, and it's just, like, she's now married to, like, in a lot of ways, she just really wants to be close with her best friend who passed away as well. And it's interesting, like, how her best friend and Fleabag's best friend both have passed away. So they are going through these different types of grieving. I mean, she did now is with her husband, and they are fully in a relationship. So be with that what you will. I mean, she also is a woman grieving. So I think everyone is just kind of going through the motions in their own ways, and we get Fleabag's perspective, so that gives us all of her takes. But Olivia Colman is nuts in the show, for sure. But she also, I think it's this whole thing of Fleabag reminds her of her late best friend, and also the fact that she's living in her late best friend's home with her late best friend's husband.
With Fleabag, you know, her mom's death is one thing, but then her best friend, Boo, accidentally gets killed. Boo was really Fleabag's, like, the only real person that knew her.
Yeah, and in some of the scenes when she's breaking the fourth wall and talking to the audience, she actually, like, it'll flash to Boo or, like, flash to Boo's reaction in, like, a similar scenario. And I think that she breaks the fourth wall, essentially, because she's just so upset and she lost her person that she would normally speak to about these things. And until the second season, she hasn't really found someone who gets her on that deep of a level.
Totally.
She just really has all this love and nowhere to give it. And it's kind of everywhere. And her family, which we'll really get to when we talk about the dinner scene, but is pretty dysfunctional and doesn't really want or take the love that she, like, tries to give them in her own way. So it's just, it's very sad.
And then season two starts, which takes place, like, a year later.
So the first episode, they are having a dinner party. This is kind of the first getting back together of the whole fam.
It's the whole family. And then this other person.
A special guest. The beginning, the whole, so probably for, like, the first 10 minutes, this dinner is going on. And Fleabag has no idea who this just man at the table is. Come to find out, he is the priest because this is an engagement dinner. And he is going to marry the godmother and Fleabag's father. Claire and Fleabag have had this extraordinarily complicated relationship, made only more complicated by Claire saying that she has to go to the bathroom and Fleabag walking in to find her having a miscarriage.
Basically, Fleabag completely covers for her.
So she comes back to the table and is sitting down, and then Claire starts drinking again, and Fleabag is, like, flipping out, and everyone's like, what's going on? And so she just is like, I had a miscarriage, and everyone's like, you're not even dead. What? I feel like this is, like, the best just, like, bottle episode. I feel like we also get to do such a deep dive into Claire and Fleabag's relationship, which is honestly my favorite part of the show.
Yeah, it really evolves. Even though they don't really get along amazingly all the time, and even though they don't always really talk, there's always a love between them and a connection between them. And even though most people don't believe Fleabag, or they're like, you know, she's going to be up to something, she's going to make a scene, Claire pretty much always believes Fleabag.
Yeah. And I feel like the whole time Claire is trying to get what Fleabag has, and Fleabag is trying to get what she has. But then by the end, Claire and Fleabag are finally, like, Fleabag is setting Claire up to actually go on her own interesting, wild journey.
Yeah.
So Claire, in the first episode of season two, after they say they're going to the hospital, which is a very, like, dramatic scene, and all of a sudden Claire is actually the one that says, the priest is quite hot. And she kind of sets this whole tone of, there's a hot priest, and this will be the center of season two.
I feel like the entire world fell in love with Andrew Scott.
Until we get world peace, I'll go with Andrew Scott. He's not your typical heartthrob, no. I feel like. But just in the first episode, it sets the scene completely of season two, because he is the only one at the table that's, like, actually trying to engage Fleabag and, like, listen to her and talk to her. Like, she is so afraid of creating any drama, and Andrew Scott, like, continuously is asking her to talk about herself. Mm-hmm. Then you find out he's a priest.
But she's like, oh, he's a fun, sweary priest because he's drinking, yes, and swearing. Yes,
loves to swear.
Ugh. He is the most charming, cute, like, endearing thing I've ever seen. He's such an unbelievable actor. Like, you don't catch him acting for a second.
Fleabag's love, like, actually love interest. What were they going to do? Oh, they are going to make him a priest.
Right.
I guess. Sure.
That's the only way. Because she's never even really had a love interest. Like, she's had guys that she's hooked up with and whatever, but, like, we've never seen her have actual genuine emotions and, like, a real...
Or chemistry.
Or a connection. Like, we've just never even seen that before.
The second episode, she decides to go to his church. He's like, please be seated, which I have been to church before, so you sit. And she says, and also with you. And just, like, it completely embarrasses herself, obviously is the only one that's speaking. And he, like, looks up and he realizes that she's in his church and, like, he blushes. And you're like, no!
He has the cutest reaction. He, like, giggles at her. And we're not used to, like, people actually thinking she's, like, funny and cute. Like, we're used to people being like, oh god, like, Fleabag's a fucking
Yeah,
ass.
The boys treat her awfully in season one.
Yeah.
So
the fact that he, like, thinks she's funny and cute and endearing, it, like, makes me want to die. It's so cute.
So he goes from being this, like, cute, sweet, like, you're just, like, love him, to becoming a heartthrob.
They've been spending time with each other. She's like, oh my god, he's hot. She, like, likes him. And they kind of have this connection. And he at one point says, like, we're not gonna have sex. Like, I don't do that. I'm a priest. We really see this, like, amazing connection between them, knowing that it's, like, can't happen. And then it just makes a turn and it becomes, like, the hottest thing I've ever seen. She, like, walks in and she says, like, hello, father.
He's like, don't call me father. Like, it doesn't fucking turn you on.
So from that moment on, it really just takes a turn and you're like, this is the hottest non-sex I've ever seen.
And just to clarify, we really have seen very little of Fleabag forming any type of connection. And she is with the whole audience in that we have fallen head over heels in love for this man.
He ends up coming to her house, like, in the middle of the night, and it's like a callback to the first episode of the show. He looks at her and he says, I can't have sex with you because I'll fall in love with you. And she, like, turns to look at the camera and look at us, and she's like, we're gonna have sex. And you're just like, there's so much sexual tension.
You're like, yeah, you are. You really are.
You really are. There's so much sexual tension. And then it goes down, and we only see it for, like, a second, because she pushes the camera away, and that is,
yeah,
like, huge. The first time she, like, doesn't want us to see her having sex because it actually means something to her.
Obviously, we know she's very lonely, and we kind of figured that out the whole first season. That was what we were, like, her just admitting how lonely she was. And in the second season, when we first meet him, it's, like, their first time hanging out. And he's like, I'm really lonely as a priest. So he's, like, talking about how lonely he is. So their connection is just, it's so incredible.
It's so incredible.
It is one for the books. But they have this very beautiful scene at the end. And, you know, she has never said, I love you. She's never come, like, aside from when she said it to Boo, she finally says, I love you to him. And he just says, it'll pass. And then he, like, stands up and he's like, but I love you too. And it's just this perfect moment. And then he's like, I'll see you on Sunday. And he's like, I'm just kidding. Don't you ever fucking come into my church again.
It's the perfect ending. He gives this speech at the wedding about how brave and hopeful you have to be to fall in love. And so then they have this beautiful moment where they're saying, I love you to each other. And you know that, like, they're not going to see each other again. Like, it's never going to work out. Like, this is the end. But she is walking away from the camera and she turns to us and waves at us, like, waves goodbye and smiles. And she turns back around and she walks away from the camera. And you like, see that hope that he was talking about. And you feel like, okay, she is going to be okay.
Not to also spoil Normal People, but it's similar in that, like, love sometimes, very sadly, is it ignites something in you and it, you know, it gets something going in you, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not always going to be forever. They give you something so that you can go on without them.
Wow.
That was, at least that's what I'm telling.
That was very poignant, Em. That like blew my mind the way you just put that. That is so true.
Do you think that there's hope? Anyone think that there's going to be a third season or?
How can you even get better than this?
Also, I will say after both the first and the second season, like she created something that's like men are such a great part of your life, but you can figure out whether you're with a man or not with a man that you can be happy just in who you are.
100%. I totally agree with that. What else are you watching this week?
Okay, well, I talked last week about how I was watching I May Destroy You.
Yes.
And I knew nothing about the show. So it's Michaela Cole, and I just want to say I stand by my own recommendation 100%. It's a comedy like Fleabag, but with a very dark subject matter, and it's about her own personal sexual assault. So it's dark, but it's also a comedy, and also Michaela Cole is just like so likable and hilarious and amazing and relatable in it. So I just wanted to re-recommend.
I just started Watchmen, which I know I'm a little late to the party on that, on HBO. And I've only watched one episode so far. I just started it, but it's really good and very confusing. And I have no idea what's going on, but I just live for Regina King. So I cannot wait to see what happens.
Great.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you so much for
listening. Oh, guys, and we made an Instagram.
Yes.
At the Bingeable Podcast. So please follow us.
We will see you next week.
Thank you so much. Cannot wait.